news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me now on Saturdays live from 10 to noon here at iHub Radio. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. Every week I've been, since we've been going through this whole virus thing, I've been kind of keeping track of what the numbers look like when we start the week and what they look like when we end the week. And it is sobering. As of this past Monday, worldwide, we had a total of 1,300,000 cases. As of this morning, we have 1,700,000 cases. That's 400,000 more people that they are reporting as having the virus just in the last 6 days. And the death toll worldwide on Monday was 71,000, and this morning it was 103, almost 104,000. So that represents a whole lot of parents and siblings and children and heartbreak. And a lot of the people who have died without anyone there with them because of the threat of letting anyone else come into the ICU or emergency rooms or wherever. In the United States on Monday, they were reporting under 350,000 cases. And this morning, it was over 500,000 cases. That's 150,000 more people who tested positive and were able to be diagnosed with the virus in the United States in the last 6 days. The death toll went from 10,000 on Monday to over 20,000 this morning. In 6 days, that death toll has doubled, and it will get higher, even though we are, in some places, beginning to flatten out what they call the curve, this terrible bell curve that shows how high the number of cases can go before it starts to come down again. Flattening that curve, which we have done largely in California, that still doesn't mean that a whole lot of people aren't getting sick and aren't dying. I want to acknowledge that the number of you who are sticking by the guidelines to separate yourselves, to stay inside as much as possible, to distance yourself from other people, physical distance, not social distance, physical distance, and to wear masks whenever you're outside. You know, when they first talked about wearing masks, and the doctors originally said, if you have any symptoms, you should be wearing a mask because you want to protect other people. Well, the problem with that, this is where not just medical doctors or statisticians, but psychologists need to get involved too. Because there are human realities in all of this. It's not just statistical. So if you say to people, you should only wear a mask if you have symptoms, then anyone who's wearing a mask is assumed to have symptoms. When all of us are wearing a mask, it may give us more protection if we don't have symptoms, but it doesn't make a pariah out of whoever does have symptoms and is wearing a mask. And just because you have symptoms doesn't mean you have coronavirus. And its ability to live, the coronavirus ability to live on surfaces. I did some investigation of this week. And this is why if you have any kind of alcohol spray or even peroxide, or if you have any of the wipes left, if you can get hold of any of that stuff, it turns out that the coronavirus can survive on surfaces where you may think while you're out at the store and bringing home the groceries, even if you're wearing gloves at the time, and you appropriately take those gloves off before you walk in the house to keep your house free. It is true that there could be microbes of this virus on the packages you're bringing home from the store. And I will say, there's a point beyond which you're going crazy. But being safe and thinking through every move you make, could I be touching something? Like even when I go to the ATM, could I be punching in the numbers with a bare finger where somebody who was there just before me just punched in numbers and did have the virus and maybe didn't even know it? So surgical masks, for example, the molded ones that are blue, the virus can last for 7 days on the outside of one of those surgical masks. And because it is made of a molded, almost like a plastic, you can spray that. Get it slightly wet, let it dry on its own, and you will be killing or getting rid of that virus. There were researchers who did a big study on the virus's lifespan. And originally they did it in a room that was 71 degrees Fahrenheit and had about 65% humidity, which is kind of the way we keep our homes inside. After 3 hours, the virus had disappeared from printing and tissue paper, so from newspapers or the cardboard wrapping on your packages. It took 2 days for that virus to leave wood surfaces or cloth fabrics, which is why a lot of people, when they're outside and running around going to the store, when they come home, they take off their clothes, throw them into the laundry, or at least put them aside, because the virus can, in fact, stay on cloth fabric for up to 2 days. It took about 4 days for the virus to no longer be found on glass or on paper money. It lasted the longest, about 7 days, on stainless steel and plastic. Now, another study was done and published in the New England Journal of Medicine that said the virus could live up to 4 hours on copper, like pennies, up to a day on cardboard. So if you go to the market and you bring home a package and it's wrapped in cardboard and you put it away, at the end of a day, you probably don't have to worry about it. But you certainly should be washing your hands after you put those groceries away. This is why they keep saying, even if you're in your own home, wash your hands constantly. And the fact is, on cardboard, that virus can last for about 8 hours, at least compared to one study that was done. Now, temperature matters. They did a study that at 39 degrees Fahrenheit, which is pretty cold, the virus lasted up to 2 weeks in a test tube. When the temperature was turned up to 99 degrees, it lasted 1 day and that was it. So it is true that as it gets warmer, the virus may recede, doesn't like hot weather, but that doesn't mean it can't come back. So we want to make sure that we have done everything possible to keep ourselves and our families and other people around us as safe as possible while all of this is going on. And I just encourage you, if you can put on gloves before you go and touch other surfaces or go pull things off the shelves in the market, when you leave the market, peel the gloves off inside out, throw them in the trash, spray or clean around your car, You don't want to bring it into the car and then get back in the car and then bring it into the house. I know it can make you feel crazy. I know it can make you feel paranoid. But what it needs to do is to make you conscious. Think about everything you're touching and doing. When you get home from being out, take off your mask, spray it lightly, and let it sit and dry on its own, and at least you have some hope that you have not brought that virus with you into your house. Now, here in the Coachella Valley, we do have some virus cases, in spite of the fact that the California numbers have been pretty good, because all of us, and my hat off to you, have been trying to observe this need to be physically distanced. I did have to kind of laugh, though, when I saw the statistics for the number of people who are calling lawyers and trying to find out what it takes to get divorced. There's a whole lot of people who have not been spending 24/7 with their partner for years. The city I live in is Palm Desert, right next to Palm Springs. And in Palm Desert, which is not that big a city, we've had 45 cases and 2 deaths. In California, as of this past Monday, I did not get the numbers for this morning, but as of this past Monday, there were over 14,000 positive cases reported in the state of California. And when you think about how many people live in this state, that is a fairly small number, because we've been observing physical distancing for so long. And hats off to Governor Newsom for that. Now, testing is a big deal, and you hear them talk about that more than almost anything else, because the truth is, we may have had more total tests than any other nation on earth, but we have not had the most tests per capita, meaning there are other places that have much smaller populations, so their total number of tests is not as high as ours. But the number of people per 1,000 or per 100,000 that they are testing is considerably higher than ours. For example, Oklahoma. Officials in Oklahoma, over the entire month of March, identified 565 cases of the virus. Well, their test sites, they only had 6 test sites in March. The test sites expanded to 14, and the number shot up to over 980 in just 3 days. So testing makes a difference in us knowing where people are with the virus, how many people have the virus, and what more we need to do as individuals and as counties and cities and states to try and control what's going on. It's not going away anytime soon, but if we all do our part, we can not only save our own lives, but the lives of all the people we love and care about and live with. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal, and you are listening to iHub Radio.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
Okay, I want to talk about, I want to direct this to the people I call the Yahoos. And you're out there. And if you don't know that's what you are, I'm going to tell you, you are. In Idaho, there is this thing called the Liberty Movement. Among the people who are prominent in this movement, remember the guy Amon Bundy, who went out to protest that the government didn't want him to graze his cattle on public lands and took some place in Oregon hostage, and people came from all over the country to stand up for the right for Americans not to be told what to do by the government. Well, this liberty movement in Idaho is really an outright rebellion against the rest of the country. Some state lawmakers in Idaho and a county sheriff called the governor's stay-at-home order an infringement on individual liberties. Healthcare providers and others in that state have been absolutely appalled at public calls made by these yahoos to forget about the social distancing. And the concern is Idaho doesn't have a huge population. And if they get decent numbers of people who get this disease because they're not going to follow the guidelines, the small hospitals are going to put people at greater risk of dying because they won't have enough capability to take care of the people who get sick. State Representative Heather Scott, who happens to be a Republican, no surprise, is encouraging her constituents to push back on the stay-at-home order, saying the people have a God-given constitutionally protected right to peacefully assemble. And there's a sheriff in this Bonner County in Idaho, Sheriff Darrell Wheeler. He said the public has been misled by public health officials' dire predictions. He called on the governor to get an emergency session of the legislature to debate whether or not they had to stay at home. Now, it's true that Idaho was one of the last states in the country to identify a virus case. But it now has more cases per capita, more cases based on the number of people, than California. And Sun Valley Ski Resort in Idaho now has the largest per capita concentration of cases in the country. More based on the number of people than New York. And then there's Kansas. The Republican-led panel of the Kansas legislature overturned an executive order by the Democratic governor of Kansas that called for limits on church services and funerals. The governor wants them to abide by the federal guidelines for how many people should get together in any one place at any one time. Governor Laura Kelly, the Republican members of the state legislature, are saying that Governor Laura Kelly, who's in her first term, had overstepped her authority. The state Senate president, a Republican from Wichita, Kansas, said, "It appears to be out of line, extreme, and clearly in violation, a blatant violation of our fundamental rights." And Kansas is one of the places that is now planning to hold open church services for Easter. And in fact, the state attorney general of Kansas issued a memo advising police in Kansas not to enforce the governor's order, arguing that while the order contained what appeared to be public health advice, it was a violation of rights guaranteed under the state's constitution. Meanwhile, at least three clusters of infections in Kansas have been traced to these church gatherings that people are insisting on holding. There are 9 states altogether without stay-at-home orders, which all coincidentally have Republican governors, and not that I'm making any aspersions, I'm just saying. North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Utah, Wyoming, Arkansas, Iowa, and Nebraska. Now, the federal guidelines give state and local authorities leeway to decide what they consider to be essential businesses in this kind of an emergency. And in almost every state, it includes grocery stores, food production, like the farm workers that we've got down here in Coachella, pharmacies, healthcare, utilities, the people who supply our lights and air conditioning and heating, shipping, banking, governmental services, law enforcement, and news outlets so that people know what's going on. Oh, did I remember to mention, and guns? Talk about something that, at least in my view, is not essential in any way during what we're going through right now in this country. It's guns. What the hell are people so afraid of with regard to their neighbors? What they ought to be afraid of is not living up to keeping themselves and others safe. This is Anita Rufus. I am the lovable liberal, and this is iHub Radio.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, as we head toward the end of this second hour, I appreciate you being with me. I'm here now on Saturdays live from 10 to noon at iHub Radio. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. I had written down throughout the week, every once in a while, things occur to me that I think I want to say on the show, and then I end up with too much to talk about. So I'm going to just throw a few of these out there before I get into watch what they're doing, and there's a lot. The election, the primary in Wisconsin, where people lined up wearing masks and where the Republican state legislature wouldn't let the governor postpone or expand mail voting. The picture that got to me in all of that in Wisconsin was the woman who was pushing her mother in a wheelchair, both of them with masks on, who stood in line for 2 hours waiting to vote. That's what makes me cry. The news stories about farmers who have crops rotting in the fields, who are literally plowing under food. Why isn't the government paying them to send that food to food banks that are in such difficulty right now with trying to feed all the people who are coming in who need help, who haven't yet received that incredible stimulus money that is supposed to come within the next week or two and won't be enough for most people to make up for the fact that they didn't pay their rent this month? My mother had a saying that rings in my head all the time when times are tough. She always used to say, "This too shall pass." And this too shall pass. We will get past this. But the bottom line for me is, we have to make this mean something. It's not enough to just go through this and hope to get through the other side of it. It's not enough to realize how dependent we are on the relationships we have with others, or the ability to go out to a restaurant or to go to a movie, to indulge the things we enjoy or that we care about. That's not enough. This has to mean something going forward, because we truly are all in this together. I'm going to end the show with good news, but first I want to take you through a little bit of Watch What They're Doing, a segment that I love, because there's a whole lot of stories that don't get a lot of play, especially right now when everything's about the damn virus. Trump wants to mine the moon. Are you ready for this? I am not kidding. In the midst of this virus, Trump, who, of course, you know, put together this space force ostensibly because we need to be able to fight extraterrestrial wars. He announced this past week a new executive order where he was calling for United States business interests, companies, to mine the moon. The order specifically noted that a return to the moon would allow us to explore and exploit lunar minerals, and that this could apply to the moon and Mars and other celestial bodies. Now, one of the major roadblocks that holds businesses back from mining the moon is that there is some uncertainty regarding the right to recover and use space resources. Trump's executive order attempts to advance what is a very flimsy legal framework that exists to govern various nations' claims to space. How would we have felt if the Russians, who were the first ones to land anything on the moon, not a man, but a thing, what if that meant they got the moon? There's an international resolution that is actually called the Moon Agreement that was adopted over the past 50 years. But the Trump administration, in its executive order, didn't even acknowledge that that exists, let alone put forth any evidence that made it illegitimate. So with everything that's going on, the president wants us to mine the moon, wants private businesses to be able to mine the moon. He also has renewed calls for a broad payroll tax cut to ease the economic pain of the virus. Now, this $2.2 trillion economic stimulus and the virus fighting legislation that was passed last month, it allows for employers to defer payroll tax payments, but it doesn't actually cut those payroll tax payments. Although those companies are going to get money out of the stimulus package to pay salaries, if that ever gets worked out. They're having big problems with that, with banks saying, well, we don't know what we're supposed to be doing. And the truth is, when you cut payroll taxes, the immediate impact is on Medicare and Social Security. If we're going to be so concerned about watching out for the aged among our population, the people who are known as elderly, which now includes me, we don't want them to get the virus because it hits them harder. But hey, the hell with Social Security and Medicare. Really? Now, you know that the president did quietly shut down immigration asylum at the border. He doesn't want to let any virus in. So in spite of international laws that we helped to write that say that people seeking asylum because going back to where they came from could lead to their torture or death, the Trump administration has decided to use an obscure public health law to justify cracking down on asylum seekers who are not even entitled under this new approach. They're whisked to the nearest border crossing and returned to Mexico without a chance to even put their name in for asylum to be considered. This is a way of setting aside national and international laws that have been in place for decades. Trump administration gave very little detail on what they were doing, but it took place on the same day that Trump announced that our southern border would be closed to non-essential travel. Trump's previous policies with regard to immigration have targeted asylum, but stopped short of ending it. And I just think it's really important that we remember that while he's playing all these games about asylum and immigration and claiming that it's to protect us, there are international laws about things like this, and we helped write them. Now, under the name of protecting the country, the Environmental Protection Agency announced that it was going to suspend indefinitely regulatory enforcement on businesses, laboratories, and other entities or businesses that are involved in evaluating and complying with environmental law. Because after all, while we're fighting this virus, we certainly don't want to keep regulations that keep the air cleaner and the water cleaner and the EPA statement is a nationwide waiver of environmental rules for the indefinite future. For example, the Bureau of Land Management is still issuing leases for oil, gas, and extraction of other industries on public lands. They haven't cut that off. A plan to allow disposal of some low-level nuclear wastes at municipal landfills instead of licensed nuclear waste facilities. Excuse me? The virus justifies that we're going to put nuclear waste at municipal city landfills? Really? Why? Watch what they're doing. While nobody's paying much attention, a lot of the people that the president has put into some of these agencies, they don't care about the purpose of the agency. They just want to make it easier for people who make money to make money. And while the federal government has not moved to restrict domestic travel within the United States, governors of at least 12 states are taking action to discourage people from coming across state lines. For example, in Texas, they had some law enforcement officials at the border, and if anybody came through with a Louisiana license plate, they were telling them they couldn't come into Texas. Talk about freedom. And talk about a federal government that is not getting involved in some of the things that ought to be being done. Here's another watch what they're doing. Donald Trump nominated a former clerk who used to work for Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court Justice. The president nominated this former clerk to Brett Kavanaugh to a seat on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. That is the court in our district courts around the country that hear federal appeals before they go to the Supreme Court. And the District of Columbia Court of Appeals is considered the stepping stone to the Supreme Court. This guy is 37 years old. He's only been on the federal bench for 6 months and is one of the youngest federal judges in the country. But he happens to have deep ties to Mitch McConnell. By the way, he was rated non-qualified by the American Bar Association when Trump nominated him last year to be a federal judge in Kentucky. Watch what they're doing. Trump is removing inspectors general because he doesn't want any oversight about how the money is going to be spent from this stimulus. Who's doing oversight over the oversighters? We have a basically dysfunctional federal government under this president. How you could possibly like the results of that, I don't know. This is Anita Rufus. You're listening to iHub Radio.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I actually have some good news I want to share with you. There are stories that kind of don't get covered, but I dig them out. The Library of Congress owns a rare print copy of the Gutenberg Bible. They also have something called Know Your Meme, M-E-M-E, that thing that talks about, you know, a trending topic online. They have the Urban Dictionary. They have something called Cute Overload, which has also been preserved at the Library of Congress. And I just want to share with you that for the past 20 years, a small team of archivists has been cataloging internet culture. They've totaled more than 2.1 petabytes of data, which is about 18 billion digital documents. And the fact is, that's just a sliver of what is on the internet. But they call themselves digital hoarders, which I thought was really cute. Now, there are lots of people who are coming up with ideas for what to do for stay at home, especially if they have kids, but also just for adults wanting to find things to do to fill their time because you can't watch the news all day. You'll go crazy. And there aren't always great old movies on all the time. Although I have to say that I watch old reruns of Law and Order and they hold up beautifully. I never remember the stories and they're great shows. But the world is evidently currently clamoring for jigsaw puzzles. When's the last time you did a jigsaw puzzle? About half of humanity right now on the planet is on lockdown. And many people are turning to jigsaw puzzles. But it turns out that ramping up production of jigsaw puzzles isn't easy when all of a sudden there's a big demand. Each puzzle takes weeks to create. And I know people who do jigsaw puzzles and then are so proud of having put them all together that they glue them and frame them and put them up on the wall. And some of them are gorgeous. Now, if you're looking for a different kind of challenge, I don't know if you know the name Rube Goldberg, but Rube Goldberg was a cartoonist who was known for designing incredibly elaborate contraptions that would do the simplest tasks, like pouring a glass of water. And you've seen pictures of these elaborate machines where a ping pong ball falls down a little chute. And when it gets to the bottom, it triggers something that moves forward. But the thing that moves forward trips a lever that turns something else. And after about 20 different ways of things getting from one place to another, something hits a glass of water and it tips over and pours into another glass. I mean, something as silly as that. Well, as it turns out, Rube Goldberg's granddaughter, whose name is Jennifer George, has invited people to build devices that drop a bar of soap into someone's hands so that they can wash their hands for 10 or 20 seconds. She wants them to build one of these absurd, elaborate contraptions that would drop a bar of soap. I love it. Tomorrow, Sunday, April 12th, Andrea Bocelli is going to be doing a live concert, and he's doing it from the empty Duomo Cathedral in Italy. It's going to be 1 o'clock Eastern time, which means it would be 10 o'clock our time, and it will be streaming live on YouTube. And that ought to be an incredible thing to watch. If you need some stimulation to feel good about Easter. On April 18th, Global Citizen and the World Health Organization are doing a virtual concert called One World Together at Home. It's going to feature lots of artists, including Andrea Bocelli again, but people like Elton John and others, doing this concert called One World Together at Home, April 18th, and you can watch that on TV. A firefighter named Elielson Silva. There was a wonderful picture of this firefighter who has no fear of heights because he's used to climbing those tall ladders. He's in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And he went into one of those little baskets that sits on top of one of those great big tall ladders that fire trucks have. And he was way up above everybody in the town playing his trumpet for everybody to hear. And people came out all over the city onto their balconies and listened to him playing that trumpet in the skies over Rio de Janeiro. At least one war in the world has been slowed as a result of the virus, and I wish that were true of all the wars in the world. But Saudi Arabia announced a ceasefire in their war with Yemen that could pave the way for ending this five-year war, in which millions have been displaced or killed. And it turns out that in Saudi Arabia, which we don't get a whole lot of news out of Saudi Arabia, just like out of Russia. We don't know how many cases they have in Russia because they're controlling the news. Well, in Saudi Arabia, it turns out that as many as 150 members of the Saudi royal family are believed to have the coronavirus. But at least in the midst of all of this, they're announcing a ceasefire between Saudi Arabia and Yemen. That's a piece of good news. I'm happy to say that here locally, we have something called CV Independent, which is a local independent newspaper, which is part of independent newspapers all around the country. And CVI has been hurting as much as any other independent newspapers because they rely on local businesses for ads to support what they're doing. Well, CVI is one of 400 local newsrooms around North America that received a $5,000 grant from the Facebook Journalism Project to help them stay alive and continue putting out important news that we can all link into to find out what the hell is going on. And in Virginia, the Democratic governor of Virginia signed several new gun restrictions this week, passed by the Democratic Assembly. This is the difference that elections can make. So, sensible gun laws now in Virginia.